Maybe you made a friend or two in your new work, and that's it. It's now gone. So you're on your phone. You're trying to connect with people who've got their own crazy busy lives at home. It's very, very hard. And then you've got to, then someone's telling you you've got to work. Well, what do? Do I wake up at 6 in my pajamas and start work, or do I clock on at 9 o'clock? Or, you know, what do? Because I'm used to taking a few little breaks in the day, but I can't go outside because I'm locked into my apartment.
This is another episode of the Automate Grow podcast. My guest today is Ed Andrew. Ed is the author of Golden Ticket to Your Dream Job, and he's the host of the Human Impact podcast. So Ed, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure. Well, I'll try not to take over because I'm used to being on the other side of the mic. So
it makes my life a lot easier.
I'm very relaxed because I have to do nothing apart from respond.
So we met through a common acquaintance, which is Tim Allison. And Tim has been a guest on this podcast, and I was a guest on his. And I guess you've been working along with Tim and your other friends. Is it Scotty Schindler? Is that
Scotty Schindler, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been doing something unique, I think. I know right now the world's crazy and we're all on lockdown. Mm. So I think you guys have come up with something pretty interesting and unique to try to give back and help people, right?
Yeah, well, I've always loved the idea, Michael, of having like a panel podcast. I love the idea of panels. I love what Jerry Colonna does in his panels. They're really cool. And obviously Joe Rogan does his panels. And I just thought it's a good idea. And Tim, host of the Screw the Naysayers podcast, he and I have been chatting for a long time. Scotty Schindler is also in Australia. He's ex-world champion amateur surfer, plus he grew a business which managed $1.25 trillion worth of real estate listings. So these guys, we've got 100 years of entrepreneurial experience between us, but we're all very aligned philosophically. I said to Tim and Scotty, look, I want to do this panel. Would you like to come and be involved? And they both, yeah, absolutely. So we run it every week, 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 10 p.m. UK time, 7 a.m. Eastern time, Australia. It's called Mindset Mastermind. You can find it on my website across our social media. All it is helping people who are struggling as they get through the crisis. It's everything to do with entrepreneurship, business, career, work, life. We had a lady on who was talking this week who was about to migrate to Hungary to teach English as a foreign language, and she's had to put all of her plans on hold, and she's a little bit despondent about that. And so we're talking about, well, why not try to start growing your business from New York? Do it online, see what engagement you can get. Just turn the crisis into pivoting your ideas and your mindset around, okay, well, how can I explore it now? So we know there are practical realities or obstacles such as visas, because there are none at the moment. But when that comes back, and then Tim was saying, well, you know what? You're in a great position because the UK's left the EU. So all those English speakers are not going to be able to go there. They're going to be in the same boat as every American, Canadian, Australian. So, you know, use that as a sort of weaponize or empower that mindset rather than think of it negatively. So all sorts of stuff like that. So it's really cool. It's interesting. We enjoyed, and we've got three, we've run very different businesses. So there's always one of us who can answer the question, if not two. So it's great fun.
So what sort of response have you been getting, and what platforms are you guys on, by the way? I forgot to ask.
So you'll find all of us on LinkedIn. We're probably our most active on LinkedIn. As Tim's is screwthenaysayers.com. Scotty Schindler is just scottyschindler.com. I'm edandrew.com. We're all pretty easy to find. We're using Zoom as our platform, though. I did get Zoom bombed, not on my call, but on someone else's call recently. Yeah, it was a horrible experience. The first 3 seconds was really funny, the dancing Africans, and then they started scribbling and slurring racial abuse. And not only that, there's the dog.
Dog doesn't like it.
Is that you thought maybe it was just a bit of AI or just it was automated. They just dump a bot in there, but no, they're actually calling your names out. And when that happens, it gets personal. It's like, dump it. No. And that's, yeah, I felt sorry for the guys hosting the call because I had like 40 people on it and everyone's off and I'm not going back because you know what, it was just, it was a really bad experience.
Well, I'm glad I haven't had that yet. We're on Zoom, so hopefully.
And we are on Zoom.
So hopefully not. That joins.
Hopefully so, not.
You know, obviously with the global crisis over this virus, people are adjusting to a new normal of, first of all, being at home all the time. And what I find particularly is I'm observing people that are working at home for the first time. And I think for me personally, I've been doing this forever. Yeah. It's interesting how, I mean, I've run my entire company like this for a very long time. And even before that, I think my gig was like that. But it's shocking how the things to me that seem just so small, people are really like talking about how they're struggling with it. And I think it's just,
well, I think
it's a comfort thing, right?
It's a comfort thing, but I think the mental health aspect of it is, so you and I are sitting here, right? Even though the world is in chaos, we've seen it many times before, right? This is not our first time. But none of us have ever experienced a total lockdown. Like, watch a Contagion movie and it's real, right? We haven't seen that. But I live in the country. I live two hours north of Sydney. I'm surrounded by, we've got 1,000 acres on a golf course, kangaroos hopping around. That's what the dog's barking at. So to us, and our supermarkets here, okay, there are a few things still missing, but ultimately there's no one, they're not busy. Whereas our friends in the UK will spend 2 hours to go and get some groceries because there are queues and there are, they were suggesting putting soldiers on them. Very different experience. But from a work at home perspective, yeah, I've worked at home. I haven't had a physical office realistically for the best part of 10 years. Because I don't need to go anywhere. I can go and have my meeting. So for us, it's very normal to create our workspace, to close the door. Even, we've got our kids at home because everyone has got a home school at the moment because the schools are shut. So that's different. But I think, so we were very used to how we structure our day. Like my day starts at 6 a.m. most days and I'm finished at 10 o'clock at night. And it used to frustrate me that the kids got home at 4:00. My wife gets home and I lose 5 hours instantly before they, with seeing what they need, taking them to exercise or riding or then having supper and then putting them to bed, even though they're older. We have this meditation routine we do with them every night. And then if I need to, I go back to work again. If you have a salary job and you're used to going somewhere, you probably get up at 6:37, you have your commute, you go to work, you leave work, you might go to the gym, you might go and have a drink or have something to eat with someone, you go home and then you switch off mode. Or if you're maybe an executive, you're back on your laptop again. They still have routine and structure in their day. What happens when you work from home is you have no routine.
Right. You're used to a structured environment where someone's programming your day, which it's almost like when I watch it, it's like, somebody's at home now, right? Working normally in an office. And I watch my wife and I'm like, I can tell that she's really feeling unplugged. She'll go into the office still, even though it's empty.
Yeah, some people like to do that because it's a place where they feel comfortable to work. So you and I, I have my podcast. This is my office I'm in at the moment. I'll set it up for podcasting and for working. And everyone in the family knows when the door's closed, it means I'm working. Because I used to like to work amongst everyone else. And my wife said, you're a nightmare because you're screaming at everyone. And I said, I'm trying to work. She said, well, then go and sit in your office and close the door.
So they're just sheltering themselves from you.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we used to that. And my family, and the other thing, here's the other thing, Michael, is my family is used to that as well. So for people who are salaried and used to going to a job, it doesn't matter if you're married or you've got kids. If you're on your own, mental health can be extremely difficult because you've got no way of getting out and seeing your friends. Imagine you've just moved from, say, LA to New York, like in the last 2 months. Imagine you've done that.
That was my whole last year.
Yeah, there you go. And maybe you've got no friends. Maybe you're in your 20s, you've got no friends. Maybe you made a friend or two in your new work and that's it. It's now gone. So you're on your phone, you're trying to connect with people who've got their own crazy busy lives at home. It's very, very hard. And then someone's telling you've got to work. Well, what do? Do I wake up at 6 in my pajamas and start work? Or do I clock on at 9 o'clock? Or, what do? Because I'm used to taking a few little breaks in the day, but I can't go outside because I'm locked into my apartment.
Yeah.
So you've got all of these.
To your point, it's not just like you wake up and the work's there. or not, right? Or there's no cue. Your normal cues are not there.
Yeah. And so for you and I, if we decide I'm going to take, you know, a Friday or a Tuesday off, right? But I know I can work through Saturday, or I can, I try not to work the weekends, and I've only been trying that for a few weeks. And here I am on Good Friday, like it's Easter weekend here in Australia. I'll try and like start at like 6 or 6:30 and do a couple of hours when the family is slowly waking up. And then I'm available, because I know that time everyone's sort of, you know, just in rest mode, and they don't really need me. And then for the rest of the day, I'm tapped out. And I know Gary Vee's been promoting that message as well recently, and he's really trying to stick to it. And I think it's really important, because particularly if you're an entrepreneur or you're an executive, you know, I used to take holidays in places I knew I could do business. Okay. Which is everywhere. I mean, literally anywhere in the world. And then I realized that actually what I'm doing is I'm not actually, now I have a family, I'm not being present with them at all by trying to do that. So it's cool to say, go and do a seminar in London if you could do that today, and then take a 2-week vacation in Europe because you're actually getting paid to go on holiday.
Right.
But trying to work when you're on holiday is a totally different thing. So I think this whole thing about working from home is how present you are with your family, yourself. And I was coaching someone yesterday around this who's going through, you know, they've actually got PTSD anyway. But talking about routine, because they used to be, I'm not going to say very much more about them, but they used to have an absolute structure and routine. And so I've got, let's get that routine back into your life.
Right.
If you're used to waking up at 6:30, set your alarm. Actually, alarms are terrible because they actually disturb your sleep pattern. So I don't use an alarm at all. Mm-hmm. Wake up at the normal time. If you're used to waking up and exercising, then even if you can't get outside, most people are still allowed to go for a walk. There are, like Paris has had a lockdown, but you can still get out early and have a walk. Or even if you're doing push-ups or sit-ups, or you're doing some form, you can do exercise in a very confined space. Like prisoners can exercise in a, like, in a 3x3. Yeah, but they can, right? They can. So you can try and get some things moving. You can do your meditation. So keep that structure in the day, right? And then say, okay, well, I normally start work at 8:30. Start work at 8:30. If you take a break at 10, take a break for 15 minutes. Switch off, close the laptop, turn the phone off, do what you want to do. And if that's how you work your day, work it normally. Now, if you've got kids and family, you might have to do a bit of homeschooling. But the point for him is, if we put structure in your day and we get exercise, we can reduce the stress we're putting into our blood cells. We actually, what happens is when we reduce the amount of cortisol, which is flooding our body when we're in a stress state, then we get more mental clarity, because the more environmental and chronic stress you get, the more the amygdala shrinks, the more the cortisol is flooded. The brain goes into don't get eaten by the dinosaur
mode. Right. It's a stressful mode in the sense that, like, you're either fight or flight.
You're in fight or flight. And people come to me and they say, Ed, I've got no clarity. My mind's foggy. I can't make any decisions. And I say to them, you know what? That's normal. Right?
Riding your logic centers.
Your whole prefrontal cortex is like abandoned. This is a chemical reaction. It's a normal chemical reaction.
It's interesting because I think, you know, my inclination was to start giving people advice. Mm. And I think what I did is I held back because I could tell that there was going to be this period where people that are used to that structured environment were going to have to figure it out. And I think it's like any stress, people are really adaptable. It's just like you see businesses are like, hey, I'm not going to make beer anymore. I'm going to make hand sanitizer. Or, right?
That's cool. I like that.
Same way, right? Like they adjust.
They might make more money and never make beer again.
For sure. Totally. Well, even I think I mentioned my sister is in Toronto, like north of Toronto. Yeah. And she was saying that her husband's company, which normally manufactures like retail signage and displays, has totally switched to masks inside of like a couple weeks, right? And I think people.
But how amazing is that?
Yeah, it is amazing, right? And I think that's the thing. It's like we have. It's like when you're given unlimited freedom. Now what? Here's your blank canvas, right? And I think that's what people struggle with because they're used to painting inside of the lines. Yeah. It's like just paint inside this picture, and when you don't have the picture anymore, it just kind of. I think they just need time to think about or have that space to do the creative part.
Yeah, I would love to go into the beer factory that is now doing hand sanitizers, or like your family's company, because I'm, you know, I've had a fashion business, so we used to manufacture. So I love seeing how things are created. Though I'm a creative, I can build companies, but I'm not very good at building dresses, right? But I'd love to see the process they go through, like what different the machinery, because it's very inventive, it's very cool, and I think, as to your point, Michael, what's great is that when people begin, and here's an example. I'll drop the Jack bomb since we'll do it. So I was talking to Jack Anfield on Monday, and we were talking about how he's a master storyteller. He loves telling stories. So he was explaining how some of his clients are changing their business model. And he was talking about a lady who's a cleaner, is a cleaning company, and of course, you know, like a housekeeper. So that's just been wiped out. So she had this idea. It's like, what am I going to do? So she started ringing around her local neighborhood saying, we can go into your company and we can sanitize your laptops, your desktops, your desks, your chairs, everything. So basically it's sterile. And I'm a cleaner. I can do that. There's no one in there. So you can't hurt me and I can't hurt you, but I can. And so she's now booked. You know,
it's a reframe of the problem, like you were saying, right?
Yeah. And I was coaching someone this week, and I know that her parents have their own cleaning company, and, you know, work has been affected. I said, look, I've just had this conversation.
Yeah.
Get on the phone. Why don't you do this? She said, that's a really good, she's like an 18, 19 year old kid. And she said, that's a really good idea. Why don't we just do that? So little things, just reframing what you're doing, but you've got to have the mental clarity and the cognitive ability to do that. And if you're in mind fog, you can't. So what's the best way to get out of this mind fog is, it's proven for anxiety, even the science, I mean, experientially, we've known it for years, but yoga, meditation, exercise, anything which can release the stress state, but exercise is one of the best ways of doing it. Any reflective activity, the reason meditation is really good is it takes the energy out of the logic brain and puts it into the body or into the heart brain. So there are, you know, go and find, my favorite app is Insight Timer. I know lots of people know Headspace and Calm because they've got money. Insight Timer is free, but it has 70% of all the world's meditators on it, which is pretty cool.
Is that true?
Yeah, I interviewed Krista, who's the CEO. Oh, he's the founder. They've got like 10 million meditators on there, but at any given time, they've got 15,000 lessons on there now, and they distribute, they split their profit with their
the creators.
With their meditators. Yeah, based on how many downloads and everything else you get. But it's free. The premise is it's free. It's very cool. I love it for that reason, because they're trying to get 50 million meditators on there at the same time for free. And I just think it's an incredible. Yeah, and, you know, and he's a successful startup guy. So, you know, go and find whatever resonates with you, whatever your belief system is, whatever works, go and resonate. But you've got to get into this reflective space. You need 60 minutes of stillness every day. You've got to, Chris.
That's interesting. 60 minutes.
I recommend 60 minutes. Like Jack does 20-20-20. Robin Sharma does 20-20-20. That's fine. It's and the thing is, we're all saying the same thing because there's science behind this. And we know that if you keep repeating patterns, you can change neural pathways. So there is absolute science in what me and thousands of other people teach, because it's been passed down for thousands of years. But, you know, LSE, London School of Economics, did a study into how long it takes for a neural pathway to form. And it was 70 days. No, it's, I think, 26 days or 21 days. So we know that repetitive action forms new neural pathways, but you've got to take action. We also know that going for a walk in nature, there's a Stanford study, an MRI study on reduction of stress just by being in, provided there's not going to be a bear or a snake. In fact, I nearly trod on a snake this week. But a second one, only the second one I've seen this year, and it's going on a walk with my daughter, and there it is sitting right in front of me. But the point being is, there are lots of practices we can do to get out of this mental fog. And then when you're out of the mental fog, you can begin to make better decisions. But trying to make decisions when you're in this, when you have this lack of clarity is dangerous, because you're making decisions based on a poor mood state and poor cognitive ability. So don't beat yourself up for not being able to make decisions. It's a natural space.
That makes a lot of sense, which is, like, you know, you're normally in such a level of routine. Don't panic at the space that you have. I think it's like accept it is what you're saying, and have work it on structured it. Way. Where, yeah. You know, because I think to your point, it's like you're on this treadwheel for so long, and all of a sudden they're saying, "Go home, sit there," and people are like looking for distraction. They're looking for a way to pass the time and get by and get through this back to that routine. Whereas I think it's a big gift where right now you're hitting on some really important things, which is, look, you don't have this big commute. Here's some practices that'll help you relieve the stress of uncertainty, which is really, it's a new thing. And then see what blooms, right, in that space.
Yeah, and when you go back, use your commute for the same purpose.
Or don't.
Well, or don't commute. Well, I think you're going to get a large.
Happen, don't you?
Well, I think you're going to get a large percentage of the population who like that structure and actually like going. And you know, there are the extroverts who want to be surrounded by people all day long.
Sure.
So they like to be in that space at work, and there are others, introverts or other groups who have adjusted really well to working at home. The difference is let's be straight about this. No one can work from home when you've got to homeschool your kids at the same time. It is just not possible.
Yeah, that's definitely a big distraction. And
so I know.
I think what's interesting though about that is that people are seeing for the first time the junk that their kids are learning.
Yeah, well, I think, and look, I've got some really good friends who do homeschool properly. And so when I say that, you know, you can't do both, what I mean is that if you're used to your corporate 9-to-5 job, you can't put 5 hours of kids learning in the same day. Definitely. That's not possible. But for the kids my girls go to school at, so the school the girls go to, they're only doing 2 to 2.5 hours a day. And most of my friends in the homeschooling world, it's the same. It's 2 to 2.5 hours. So they'll wake up 7:30. They're on their laptops. They've been given the lessons already. They're done by 10 o'clock.
Exactly. It's so crazy because I think what people are realizing, two things. One, like my nephew was done school this week by Wednesday.
Yeah.
And like for the whole week.
But the craziness, Michael, is there are some schools who are making them clock on at 10 past 9.
Oh, yeah.
And actually sit through the lesson till 3 o'clock. It's like, what's the point in that?
Well, I think it's showing you the mentality of that structure. And I think that structure plays into what people are struggling with is they've gone from public school to secondary school to university into jobs that are all based upon someone programming the structure. And then they're ripped out of that. And to them, it's stress. And I think what you and I are both saying is, okay, don't freak out at it because look at, you know, reframe it and understand what you've been given, which is, you know, you got to homeschool but you don't have the commute. You're probably going to do more in less time. You're going to find that you're probably fighting for distraction at work. Like you're trying to pass an interval between 9 and 5 that really,
and that's the point.
9 to 5.
And I think
that's the way your kid is, right?
It's the whole framing. So if I engage with a freelancer, like if I hire a freelancer or you hire a freelancer, I don't care whether they do the work at 2 o'clock in the morning. It makes no difference to me because the work gets done.
Right.
I'm doing some consulting, and actually they said, you know, where you at? And I said, I'm going to do it at the weekend when none of you are banging out on Adobe rooms, and I'm going to go to some peace and quiet, and it doesn't matter when I do it. And I think that's another point there, is that people might begin to reframe the hours of work that they have. Because if you have, say, the average 7.5 hours of work to be done, like I used to, one thing I can say is that women work a damn sight smarter than men, right? I'm sorry, all us guys out there, but I've always had female co-founders in my business,
right?
And everything I've ever done, or like the senior management staff has been women. I can tell you what, they can go home after 4 hours and their day's done. They just have this incredible laser focus, particularly if they're mums, that we seem to be more distracted. Yeah, they're very good at it. So, but the point being is that if you've got a 7 hour window, so like between Monday to Monday, and we have deadlines, and you know, obviously people have deadlines for projects, but ultimately you've got 35, 40 hours a week. You've got what are 24/7s? 168. You've got 168 hours in the week to do your 35 to 40 hours a week. Who cares when it's done? Does it really matter?
Sure. Well, and I think that, you know, but I think that on the flip side to that, what I want to emphasize to people is that you've been given this opportunity to determine. You just know your deadlines now. You're getting a glimpse into the freelance type of life or independent, you know, business person, where, to your point, it doesn't matter that you're there 9 to 5. What matters is that you get it done. And if you do that 9 to 4 or 9 to 1 or 9 to 11, you're going to be evaluated on the outcome. Because I think what we have a hangover of is this old concept of our time is money, right? It's like hourly thinking. And I think it's like when you buy a house, and if you buy a bigger house, people say like the junk or the furniture fills up to fill the house, right? But what we have an opportunity to do is create this new space and see what comes up into that space rather than just fill it with time.
Absolutely. And I used to say to my staff a long time ago in my first company, I said, look, all I really want you to be, and this was 20 years ago, be here from 10 to 4, because those are the hours that our clients are going to be on the phone wanting to talk to us. But you can be home. I don't care. You know, some will come in at 7, some will come in at 11, 10 or 11. They'll drift. And everyone's got different, you know, biorhythms.
True.
So in some businesses, yes, there's a core time of the day when we sort of all have to be online because we're online together. But you can make that 10 to 3, like a 5-hour window, whatever works for your company, that we're all there at the same time. But if you think of like salespeople, you know, when I'm coaching people for going to an interview or they've got a presentation, I say, okay, well, if you get to choose the time, what's the best time of day for you when you are most energized? Everyone has a slightly different. A lot of people, majority will say the morning, but some will say the afternoon. Some say late at night. Okay, so pick, if it's practical, pick that time for that phone call. Pick that time for that meeting. So you can say, okay, well, I know I perform at my best between 8 and 1 o'clock. Right. Well, that's still 5 core hours in your day when you're going to get the really high productivity. And the other 2 hours might be admin or operational or whatever you need to do. But focus the time of day when, especially if your customer's around that, when you can actually maximize your output.
Makes sense. Well, I think increasingly, and what we're going to see out of this is the businesses that come out of this, not just okay, but actually there's businesses right now that are doing quite well, are not time dependent and location dependent. They've embraced digital technologies. They've embraced, there's a terminology for it, but it's like outcome-based work, right? As opposed to, you know, fill this time with work. And I think those are two different outcomes, right? So I think it's a win for people to understand that there's an opportunity there, because that freelancing model, and this might be the catalyst for the cross, but it was I think this research originally said by 2030 that freelancers would exceed employees by 2030, because just the trend, right? But I think that's going to accelerate.
Well, this is quite interesting on that point. So there is more heat. So I used to be a lawyer. I've worked with some of the biggest global law firms on their contract economy. So contract lawyers on demand. In fact, there is a business called Lawyers on Demand, but I'm not plugging that. But it's just I just did. Damn. Theory. So theoretically, but probably 70% of the noise in the legal industry has been around AI, and it's been about contract work. But AI equates to less than 1%, and the contract workforce equates to less than 1%. So this is completely irrational in terms of the amount of heat in the market compared to the size of the market. But I think what we'll see is, rather than necessarily freelance, we're going to see contract picking up. Sure. So we know that, you know, you could, if you're a salaried person, say you own $100,000 a year, okay, for sake of argument. What I would advise you is, like, as a consultant or a contractor, maybe a consultant particularly, we double that number to get to your day rate. If you don't know what the market says for you, we just double that number, because you can't work every day in that space. And you've got insurances and termination clauses to factor in. So you instead of making 100, you're now making 200. But if you only work 6 months, you get to earn the same amount of money on your time. So the beauty about contract work, and it's really kicked in heavily for the 40 plus demographic or 45 plus demographic, where they've been at the sharp end of redundancies because they're expensive and it's very hard to get rehired unless you have high technical skills and high demand. It's very hard to get rehired as an employee in that space. Contractors have a different employment agreements. Of course, in the States, you've got no-will contracts anyway, or at-will contracts anyway, so it doesn't matter. But the point is, I think that's going to push down into the younger ones, particularly for sure. Thinking, well, totally. If I can work 6 months of the year, or take a nine-month project and then spend the next 3 months working on my band or painting, right, exactly. Or going traveling. But if someone says, by the way, Michael, are you around for a project for a week? Well, I'm in Bali, but you know what? Sure. This is my rate. Okay, can you get it done by this date? Sure, I'll do that. You can factor that in. And the interesting thing is, as long as you're very transparent with the recruiters who are going to help you find that job in your network and say, look, I'm tapping out in 3 months, but I want to be back in again in 6 months, then this is how the system works. And I think what we're going to see is far more people, and it's much easier in some respects, it's much easier for an employer because you can keep them off your balance sheet. But then you have to have a very large pool of people because some will drop in and out. But then on the other hand, people like the consulting houses effectively have had contractors forever.
For
like
sure,
the big ones, because they've got to find projects to keep their job, even though they still might getting paid by, you know, Accenture or someone else. It's still a similar model.
For sure. Yeah. So I think the message to people is that it's even though it's new, there's opportunity there, and you might improve your lifestyle. And you might improve your career for that matter. So,
let's hope you do.
Look at those opportunities, because I think people look at it the other way, which is I need to get back to what I was, but I want you to think about why you're at home and that you're not able to make money, or you're being gifted money and you don't have control over it. Whereas if you have control over that time and where you make money, you don't care.
but I think it lends to all sorts of other issues, which are, how do I get a mortgage if I don't have stable income? Okay, so the way that we've and then do I need to go and borrow $1 million to buy this massive house so that everyone at work thinks I'm this giant? Who cares? Because at the moment, the only person who sees you is your family and your neighbor. That's it. No one's driving past in their flash cars coming to visit you. No one's turning up in their new car just to prove how cool they are, because you can't see anyone.
Right, exactly. Well, Ed, I want to be conscious of your time. I'm going to ask you, I appreciate you spending time with me today. How do people get in touch with you, first of all?
Best place is edandrew.com. And if you want to find me, LinkedIn and Instagram, but LinkedIn is probably where I'm most active, which is just, again, Ed Andrew, linkedin.com/IN/EdAndrew. That's me.
Perfect. Okay, first off, I'll wrap with a few things. One is, if you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, who do you, Ed, spend the most time with?
Oh, myself.
There you go. Is that a virtuous circle? Is that what they call it?
Or a feedback? What I mean is that I only hang out with my family and a very few selective friends, and we all have a lot of respect for each other. We all trust, and we're all kind. Like, the thing for me is the sum of the people you are. Like, my only rule for life is be kind to yourself and to others. That's it. I'm only interested in hanging out with people who are kind.
I love it. That's great. How are you, Ed, changing the world?
I'm changing the world by helping people understand the opportunities they have for themselves, that everyone's birthright is to be happy. Everyone's birthright is to be fulfilled. Everyone's birthright is to have meaning in their life. Everyone's birthright is to do whatever it is that you choose to do, provided you have been kind to everybody else. There are no prescribed ways for you to behave, to run your life, whatever job or work you have. It's whatever you want it to be. And my role in this life is to help people, to guide them to understand what that looks like.
I love it. That's a wonderful mission. The final thing is, when we have interesting people on the podcast, we would like you to nominate or introduce us to somebody that would also be an interesting guest on Automate and Grow. We typically talk to experts and entrepreneurs about who they serve and problems they solve. So who would you, Ed, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
Okay, that's a great question. Does it have to be in any particular field, or do you want it to be around technology and entrepreneurship? Do you want it around mindset, or?
All roads are open, I think. I think it's someone that you think would be interesting to talk to, and that would have some insight into an area that would help people with either growth mindset or growing their business.
Well, I think since you've had Tim on the show, I'm going to nominate Scotty Schindler, who is our colleague. And as I say, like, how often do you get to meet a world champion amateur surfer? Like, not often.
I will preface this by saying I live next to Huntington Beach, but...
Oh, there you go. Okay. but the point being is that, and his great mate is Lane Beecher, who's like multiple female world champion surfers. So, Wow. But the point is I love elite athletes I've been privileged to coach world champion athletes because they bring a perspective and insight, which is very different. And that is so applicable to everything that we do in life. And so Scotty's a cool guy. Talk to Scotty. And also, he's grew a business to $1.25 trillion of listings, not revenue, but still, it's a big number.
All right, Scotty Schindler, you've been nominated as a future guest. Ed, I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate you having you on.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.